today on the Bill Kelly Show on 900 CHML.
It's a historic day, obviously, and any time a new president is inaugurated, but this one's special simply because of the circumstances. I mean, amid a worsening pandemic, an ongoing security threat, President-elect Joe Biden will take the oath of office just after noon today to officially become the 46th president. Global's Reggie Cicchini has some details.
This is a day that Joe Biden has worked his entire political career for.
I'm truly honored to be your next president and commander-in-chief.
As he's sworn in, he'll stare towards an empty National Mall where flags replace the crowds and precautions replace pomp. Kamala Harris will become the first woman, black woman, and woman of South Asian descent to become vice president, sworn in by the first woman of color to sit on the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor. The day will start with an unprecedented departure from the president, who won't attend the inauguration and will be without his vice president as he leaves town.
I want you to know that the movement we started is only just beginning. There's never been anything like it.
Donald Trump leaving behind a tattered legacy, a politically divided nation, and an obstacle-laden path for his successor to walk down. Reggie Cicchini, Global News, Washington.
So let's get the lay of the land here as to what's going to be happening. I mean, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance involved with any inauguration. It's going to be a scaled-down version, certainly, because of what's gone on with the pandemic and certainly the insurrection from 2 weeks ago. But there's also a lot of work yet to be done. Joining us to talk about this is Elliot Tepper, Emeritus Professor of Political Science at Carleton University. Elliot, great to have you back. Glad you had some time for us today. This is a pretty day. It's a momentous day.
It is a momentous day, and good morning, Bill.
Before we even talk about today, I want to harken back to yesterday. I could not help but notice the stark contrast between Donald Trump and his handling of the pandemic, of course, over the last year, and Joe Biden as president-elect, with the memorial service that took place on the mall there by the Lincoln and the Washington memorials. Very moving experience, and a very moving, I thought, tribute to the people who died because of COVID.
Yes, I think the inauguration of the next U.S. president really began last night, as you have noted. It was truly a moving ceremony, but it was also saying that, you know, there's a new guy in town, there's a new era dawning. That was his message. I take COVID seriously. 400,000 Americans dead under Donald Trump's watch, the singing of Amazing Grace, and also the Canadian content, the singing of Hallelujah.
Yeah, Hallelujah. That was a nice touch.
It was lovely to hear. But mainly the symbolism of it was so important that we commemorate our dead and we plan to do something about it, unlike the predecessor who couldn't be bothered.
The tone was something else, too. And again, both Vice President-elect Kamala Harris and Vice President-elect, or President-elect Joe Biden had comments to make. But I got the sense that given the moment and given what they were trying to accomplish yesterday, more was less, and I think both of them understood that. And again, I contrast that with the long, rambling diatribes that we used to get from Donald Trump, of 45 minutes or an hour and a half sometimes. Brief, but I thought very poignant comments from both of them.
Yes, it was carefully scripted. It really augurs well for the inauguration under such extraordinary circumstances, keeping in mind that the old era has not gone away. The inauguration today is being held under the shadow of its predecessor, who, as everybody knows, couldn't be bothered to show up to hand over the transfer of power for the first time in 150 years or something. But the fact is that there is no inauguration in a traditional sense, due to perhaps incompetence of the previous administration in handling COVID. It was already going to be restricted. But the assault on democracy by the assault on the Capitol building, and the President of the United States is accused officially now in Congress of inciting it, an incitement to insurrection. The number of troops there are swallowing up this inauguration, and it's a very sad sight to see. And we have to add to that the troops had to be vetted, Bill. The troops had to be vetted to be sure there were no white supremacists who might commit violence during the inauguration. There's a holdover from the previous era into what should have been a new start to a new era.
Well, Reggie Giacchini, Global News Washington, was on our program yesterday, and to your point about the vetting, over 100 of these National Guard soldiers have been actually sent home because they found what they called some concerning areas about posts they said or things that they had read or whatever the case might be, and just said, you know what, we don't want you around here. So they're getting pretty serious about this.
Yes, the how can I put this gently? It's a little late, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, Timothy McVeigh blew up the building, federal building in Oklahoma a long time ago, and the more modern moment, which could have been the turning point but wasn't, was the assault, really, the attack on the Michigan governor, the governor of Michigan, that was thwarted, fortunately, but only after the state capitol had been surrounded by armed militia people. Had, even at this late date, the threat to democracy been taken seriously, perhaps what we saw happen last week, the insurrectionist on the takeover of the Capitol, could have been nipped in the bud. So America is waking up very, very late, and perhaps not sufficiently, to the threat of white extremist and anti-Semitic racial militias of all kinds that are going to plague the Republic and are a threat to even yet today what we are seeing today and the inauguration of a new president.
And, but this is not a new phenomenon, Mel. Like, this is the thing that I found frustrating. And you mentioned Timothy McVeigh, and that's going back a long time, to the 1990s, early 1990s. And we knew that he was part of a Michigan paramilitary organization. These people exist all over the United States. They wear the camouflage. They have assault weapons. They train in remote areas. I mean, we saw that happen with the Toronto 7 a couple of years ago. That thank God we caught those people and they stopped them. But it's, I don't think you could even do that. There are so many paramilitary operations out there basically wanting to take the country away. And this is one of the reasons that I think Trump ascended to the point that he did, because he was their savior. He was the guy that was going to focus all of their attentions and say, yeah, this is our opportunity. And the manifestation of that, of course, was 2 weeks ago when they stormed the Capitol. That's who those people were.
Yes, America hasn't even begun a reckoning with the growth of this kind of activity. But keep in mind this, to swing it to what's happening today, this is also a concern for the kind of government that's about to come into power. I think the inaugural address today is basically going to say, oh no, I'm here to save the soul of America, and I'm here to heal. And what I'm offering is competence and compassion. We saw that last night, as you correctly opened up with today, that the Biden era really began by taking seriously the COVID crisis, the four crises of the COVID, the economy, climate, and racial equality are all interlinked. Until you get control of the COVID crisis, you don't have the resources to deal with the economy. But the economy, once it's released, will give you the resources to deal with climate and with racial equality. These are all interrelated. He's got an ambitious agenda. I must say, a surprisingly ambitious agenda. He's going to, today, his first day in office, he's got 17 executive orders all set to go. 100 days of COVID, that's going to be one of his themes. He's going to say, you know, we're getting 100 million shots into people's arms in 100 days. There's a federal mask mandate. But he's also taking actions on immigration, reversing a lot of the environmental damage done by his predecessor by executive order to the degree he can. And, Bill, he's going to send a $1.9 trillion bill to Congress to enact. And now we'll find out how serious Congress is in working together to overcome the immediate crises facing America.
Let's talk about that. I know we're going to have a lot of time in the days and weeks and months ahead and years ahead, Elliot, about this. But you're right. I mean, it's a very aggressive agenda. Some would say an unrealistic agenda because of the expectations that he's setting and the bar that he's setting. But this is his wheelhouse. I mean, you know, people tend to forget it. You know, remember Joe Biden as the vice president for 8 years with Barack Obama, but he spent years and years and years in the Senate before that. He knows the Senate, and they know him, and he knows how to play the game. He knows how to get things done in the Senate. You know, he and Mitch McConnell know each other. I don't think they're BFFs, but you know, there's a, I think, an understanding there. Trump never knew any of this stuff. He didn't, you know, he, first of all, he hated the Democrats, so that was a bridge he was never going to build. Even a lot of the Republicans only went along with him because, well, he was supposedly their leader. But I get the sense there's going to be a different attitude now, and plus the fact, it doesn't hurt, of course, that he has a slight majority in the House, and for all intents and purposes, with the vote of the vice president in the Senate, he's got the votes there if he needs to. That gives him a leg up on previous presidents, I would think.
He's not. He doesn't have Lyndon Johnson's ability to force coalitions together and to basically shoot the pool table. You know, Lyndon yeah. Johnson took what was at that point called, you know, the deadlock of democracy. My kind of textbooks I was reading at the time, and he just shook that place up. He knew how to, as former leader of the Senate, he knew how to get legislation through. Joe Biden knows how, and I think we should comment on that, but he will not have the kind of cooperation that Lyndon Johnson could arrange.
Lyndon Johnson, though, was one in a million. I mean, you know, one of the great stories of American history was when he assumed the presidency after the assassination of JFK. He passed the civil rights legislation, and nobody gave
That's
him
correct.
A chance. Nobody gave him a chance to do that, to get a two-thirds majority in the Senate. But, boy, this guy, Johnson, was just an incredible politician, and he got it done.
Yes, and we should build on that. One of the things the Democrats want to do right now is precisely to reinvigorate the Voting Rights Act. The House passed basically a John Lewis bill
yep.
not too long ago. They hope the Senate's going to pass it now that the Democrats have this tenuous control of the Senate. Item number one is to restore democracy by restoring voting rights to Americans and to expand the possibility that all who want to vote can vote. We'll have to see if they can get that through. But one of the, continuing on the theme of the competence, it isn't just Joe Biden. He's created a crisis cabinet. There's a lot of bells and whistles around the cabinet, representational symbolism over this appointment or that. The core of his cabinet is designed to hit the ground running now. They know, not just Joe Biden, people around him know how government works, and they plan to make it work to the degree they possibly can, given the very strained circumstances and the great challenges of the moment.
Which is going to be manifested, I suppose, with the confirmation hearings, of course, for those cabinet appointments that he's already talked about. They got off to a rocky start, and against, you know, not surprising, it was Josh Hawley that was the one that's trying to stick a monkey wrench into the works here. But that too shall pass, I would imagine, and I don't think Biden's going to have any problem with most of his nominees for that. And you're right, it's a very aggressive team. You know, Merrick Garland, who should have been on the Supreme Court, except for Mitch McConnell, is going to be the Attorney General. And it's going to be a much different Attorney General than Bill Barr, isn't it?
Well, anybody would.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that Bill Barr, you know, attempted to reclaim his reputation by resigning when he did. But he was clearly, let's say, a close political ally of the president rather than the kind of Attorney General. I don't know what kind of Attorney General you're going to have with Merrick Garland. We do know that he brings probity and independence. I don't know how aggressive he would be. My personal pick actually was Kamala Harris, somebody with fire in her belly, but she's been chosen for higher office.
Mm-hmm.
And that, too, is worth commenting on in two ways. One is the symbolism of the, you know, having a woman of color and a woman of color from two different communities, Asian and black, assume the presidency, vice presidency, one heartbeat away from a rather senior, the oldest president to assume office in a long time on inaugural day today. That's worth noting, but it's also worth noting, since we're talking about the threats that are available in America, I would be very concerned that she might become a special target as a woman of color with a Jewish husband. This is something to keep an eye on as well.
Well, exactly, and I think the analogy that I read that was rather, I think, insightful about this is that this last 4 years, this is not like an etch-a-sketch, like you could just shake it and go, and it never happened. There's we talked about the agenda that soon to be President Biden is going to have, and that's the political agenda and of course the legislative agenda. But he keeps talking about healing, and I know he's sincere when he says that, but that is a gargantuan task at this stage to try to heal some of the rifts that have been created and probably widened over the last 4 years.
Yes, I think a whole variety of things on that. One is with the FBI saying anybody who was attacking the Capitol can expect a knock on their door. Well, where were they before the necessity came? America has a great reckoning with what to do about this, and we talked about this briefly today, with what to do about the rise of white extremist, I don't even want to call them, insurrectionists. It's too widespread and not enough has been done. But also the main appeal now of Joe Biden is that, and here's his healing message, his message today is going to be what it started out. I'm here to heal the soul of America, and he's going to do it by competence in governance. And he's going to say again today, whether you voted for me or not, I'm still here for you, and I'm going to be there for you, and my government is here for you. He's going to demonstrate through governance and through particular specific actions that you can be helped whether you don't like me or not, and you know, you keep that up. Competent governance is his answer to healing America, along with the kind of compassion and empathy that we saw last night and that you discussed.
I got about a minute and a half left, but I got to ask you about this. And we're talking in this healing process, and that is the reckoning for the people that have been in the White House and in this administration for the last 4 years. There, as you know, Elliot, two very strong opinions on this. One is forget about it. If you pursue this, it's only going to make things worse. The other is there has to be accountability for what happened for those, not just in the Oval Office, but others that were enablers, and not just what happened 2 weeks ago, but what have happened over the last little while. And that, of course, is will the justice system aggressively go after the people that have broken the law in situations like this? What do you see happening?
Well, in terms of those who stormed the Capitol, if those are the ones you're referring to, yes, those will be sought after. What about those surrounding the President of the U.S., some of whom have now been pardoned as of today? And what about the President himself? If the Senate actually removes, convicts the President of incitement, and then by simple majority vote bars him from taking public office, that will answer the question about his particular future. Mm-hmm. The soul of the nation now is one question, but the soul of the Republican Party is also on the agenda. They're sorting that out right now between those who support, the Mitch McConnell, Romney, Liz Cheney, Republicans, or Cruz and Hawley and 147 GOP senators, congressmen, House of Representatives members who voted to overthrow the Electoral College even after they had been stormed by these militias. So there's a lot of reckoning to come in America. The possibility of the former president actually facing trial for a variety of charges relating to his behavior, not just in office, but on his way to office. America may have a lot of trauma ahead, one way or another.
Exactly. And we'll certainly be talking about that in the days and weeks ahead. As always, Elliot, thank you so much for the time today. Great to get your perspective on this very momentous day.
Well, let's keep talking, Bill. There's a lot of, we are in the midst of history.
Yep.
We have to remember that, and we'll have to keep talking about it.
We certainly will. Thanks again, Elliot. Elliot Tepper, Emeritus Professor at Carleton University.
The Bill Kelly Show, weekdays from 9 to noon on 900 CHML.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.